This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by PRMIseattle.com. Primary residential mortgage. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
Okay. All indications so far suggest that Omicron might be less dangerous as a variant, less dangerous than Delta. All the information that we have so far says that. Now, could that change? Yeah, it could. It could change. It could change tomorrow. It could change on Wednesday. Or, and go with me here, it might not change at all. Now, we should want this news to not change, because what we have so far is pretty promising as it relates to public health. Delta remains the dominant variant. Makes up for about 99% of the cases that we have. And reports from South Africa, where it was reported to have emerged from, although it actually came out of Europe. White supremacy, am I right? Right? Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, just white throwing supremacy. That out there.
I didn't...
They knew about it happening in the Netherlands. But you know what they have a lot of in the Netherlands?
What's that?
White people! And so they wanted to go after South Africa, which actually also has a lot of white people there. But still, it has Africa in the name. This is white supremacy in action.
We must
dismantle CNN.
Can you do a satire piece on that? That'd be fun.
Probably. Could I do a satire piece? It should have been like, wait, hold up. As soon as I asked the question, I knew it was stupid. Of course you can. So all the reports coming from South Africa suggest that hospitalization rates have not increased to an alarming rate, particularly given the speculation of this being more contagious. Now, the early data suggests that, yes, it is incredibly contagious. I believe it was 4 to 6 times more contagious, or at least Omicron can pass more easily to 4 to 6 people of the number that you end up having contact with. Now, some of that is still anecdotal, and we'll get some more specifics, because we've had stories such as the first case in the United States of close contacts of the person who had Omicron didn't end up getting infected. And they said specifically close contact. What that means, we don't know all the details. Don't know how intimate the close contact was. But we're told so far the data suggests that it's more contagious, but the symptoms are milder. That it is, and it's a little bit of hyperbole, but basically the sniffles. Does it mean you want this variant? No, I mean, I don't want to have a sneezing fit. Although I will say that sometimes a sneezing fit is quite satisfying. I don't want a stomach ache, even for 15 minutes. So no, we shouldn't want any of this. I am kind of curious as to the protections that Omicron would offer to someone in the way of natural immunity. Is the natural immunity that you get from Omicron the same that you might get from Delta? We do know that at least the early indication suggests that the Omicron virus can sort of go around the protections that your immune system would offer, having already had COVID. Again, early indication of that. But we'll figure this out. But at the end of the day, if this is merely an instance of someone getting the sniffles and then getting some protection from COVID, that's kind of a best case scenario if you take out not getting COVID. And I say that in the sense of we are all going to get COVID at some point. Some of you have already had COVID. You don't even know it. You never felt any symptoms. That's luck, right? That's a good immune system, but you lucked out. Others will get COVID despite being vaccinated. We've seen a ton of COVID cases, these breakthrough cases, even though folks in public health and especially politicians want to downplay the numbers are high, relatively speaking. Certainly in the context of how we were told that getting the vaccine was going to mean total protection, you're not going to get COVID. It was bad messaging. The data overwhelmingly suggests that if you were to get COVID while vaccinated, you almost certainly won't go to a hospital and you almost definitely won't die as a result. That's a good enough, to me, it's a good enough pitch to get the vaccine if you want. But right now, the details that we have, the data that we have on Omicron is not the end of the world or even close. Delta is still more serious. And again, in that context, Delta is serious, right? Especially if you are over the age of 65. But the vast majority of people who end up getting COVID don't die and don't go to a hospital. The death rate is about 1.2%, quote unquote, officially. It's actually much lower than that because not everyone who had COVID was registered as having COVID. They didn't even go to the doctor. They didn't even know it, particularly when you count kids, many of whom have had COVID. But again, because they're kids and COVID thankfully doesn't impact kids the same way, didn't even realize it. I still believe the reason why we saw an uptick in children getting COVID, quote unquote, getting COVID, was because it happened right before school where they were going to the doctors and getting checkups anyway. And that's why we saw an increase there. That's my hunch. So the death rate is actually much lower than the breakthrough case rate, which is also low in the grand scheme of things, but high in the context of how the vaccine was pitched. Now, regardless, we're getting over-the-top coverage from some folks in the media, particularly CNN. When they're not talking about the January 6th commission, no one cares about that except for Democrats. And maybe the 17 people who are interested in that sort of thing who watch CNN. Literally, 17 people who watch CNN. The only 17 people who watch CNN.
Well, it's 12 now that Cuomo got fired.
Yeah, there's you're going to lose a few.
Diehard yeah. Cuomos.
I'll give you that. I mean, in fairness, Andrew was one of them. Cuomo.
Yeah, they were all his family.
Yeah, his wife, his kids, not even in demo. So the only thing that they care about outside of the January 6th commission, which they lead their shows with, is Omicron. And in a lot of ways, I certainly understand interest. I certainly understand that. When we get new variants, regardless of the way that the media covers it, right now, there's going to be interest in that story because you want to know how serious it is. Are we going to have to suffer through lockdowns again? Now, the Biden administration says no. Governor Jay Inslee decides to just go overboard in talking about this. And he goes after unvaccinated people in such a bizarre way. He actually made this statement last week during one of his press conferences that no one paid attention to. But a listener sent me a note on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rant Show, and said, hey, did you see this? And I said, oh, I totally did. But just so I know we're on the same page. When did it happen? What did he say? And at what point during the video did he say it? But believe me, I get it. I saw it, obviously, because that's all I do is watch Jay Inslee press conferences. But just so we're on the page, why don't you confirm all of the details so it's much easier for me to find, I mean, for us to locate again, even though I know it already existed.
34%, as I've indicated, of Washingtonians today are walking around with a time bomb in their backpack because they're not vaccinated. And we've been fortunate to date by having some declining numbers, but that's not a certainty, particularly with this new variant.
Oh, is that so? You're comparing the unvaccinated people to domestic terrorists? Really?
Yeah, that's where he went.
I mean, really? That's where your mind went? Of all the places to go, that's where your mind went? To comparing them to terrorists, including, by the way, the folks who, as your own administration acknowledges, are medically unable to get the vaccine. You're calling them terrorists? What a ghoulish statement to make. Seriously, what a ghoulish statement to make. So the people who are religious and have real concerns with this particular vaccine, because of that, you're calling them domestic terrorists? That seems bigoted. Lauren Boebert, the congresswoman from Colorado, made a similar statement about Ilhan Omar, and that was deemed Islamophobic. That was bigotry on display. But the Muslims or Jews or Christians or whomever choose not to get this vaccine because of religious reasons? They're terrorists? Really, dude? Now, I reached out to his office today, trying to say, like, was this written? Was this scripted? Or was this off the cuff? And they told me it was off the cuff, completely ignoring the question that was, does he regret this statement?
I was going to say, they got back to you? That surprises me.
They do. They have to get back to me so that they can say they get back to me. And I weirdly have a bizarre, like, love-hate, mostly hate relationship with their communications director. Not the one who trolls me on Twitter, because he's not good enough to even become the main communications director for Inslee. And let's be honest, I can't imagine the bars that high. But Tara Lee, who's the communicator, I actually kind of like her because she's got sass.
Tara's nice.
with me, she's got sass, and I know that she hates having to. When I send an email and the subject line says request for comment, I know she's like, oh my God, what does he want now?
I feel like she gets fired up. She's like, good, I guess. She once did. Nice, she definitely sent me email today.
She definitely sent me some angry emails in the past, but she apologized, and that's why I kind of like her now. I mean, it didn't stop her from sending future snarky emails, but still. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. Don't forget, you can follow me on social media, wherever it is I am, and I am everywhere. Just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link with all the accounts to follow. And I just realized I had the texting line off this entire time. I mean, it was working, but I didn't have it up on my computer. So my apologies for missing all of your text messages, but now I'm reading them all.
We're an hour and 15 minutes.
I know, I totally forgot to load it on the website, but now I can see
it. Have you not plugged it?
I plugged it multiple times.
And you just didn't look.
And I forgot to look. My apologies. But I'm now looking. And if you sent me any brilliant text message, I'm still not going to reply. But I will, unless they're snarky, weirdly enough. But I will read every single one of them. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
Owners of a cannabis business out in Oakland find themselves asking for more protection. They are getting targeted by organized crime. People are going into their businesses, breaking things, stealing things to the tune of $5 million in product being stolen. This is part of the escalating smash and grab that we are seeing, not just in Oakland, but across the country. It will happen at some point in Seattle once they get a little bit more organized. That's my fear. Brian Suits this morning was talking a little bit about it, thinking, hey, these individual prosecutors, I mean, I'm sure he wasn't holding his breath when he said this, but the prosecutors here proactively come out, say, if you do this, we're going to go after you. We're going to go after you hard. They're not, of course, going to do that. I believe that, for example, Mary Robnett over in Pierce County, I believe she would go after, but I don't anticipate anyone coming out and saying, oh, we're going to be proactive about this one on crime. They're not going to do it because a lot of them, most of them are Democrats. But these business owners are saying, we are getting targeted, these pot shops. We're getting targeted. There were 24 stores in just a week that got hit. Violent thieves broke in. To the point where Alfonso Bluni, he is a business owner in Oakland. Listen to this that he said with the local Fox affiliate.
I was safer selling weed on the streets of Oakland than I am selling it legally. And that's a problem. That's crazy to even say, but
yep,
that's just the reality I'm living in right now.
So why is that happening? Well, I'll give you a hint by telling you a move that San Francisco officials just made. They just suspended the weed tax, the cannabis tax. I hate saying cannabis. Makes it sound like you're talking about something serious. It's weed. Stop it. They just suspended the weed tax. A 1% to 5% citywide tax on the gross receipts associated with selling weed was going to be imposed after it was approved by the voters, what, 3 years ago? They're suspending it. Why? Because it makes legal weed more expensive. And when you make a product that was previously illegal, when you make that expensive, more expensive than what you could have purchased illegally on the black market, well, guess what? The black market continues. Now, I don't anticipate the Democrats understand at all how basic economics work. I don't anticipate they understand this. So they looked at this and didn't really think, oh, hey, when we're in competition with people who are already breaking the law, going just simply the route of legalizing and doing it the quote unquote right way isn't going to stop the bad guys from doing it. People are still going to look at how much it costs. And if it costs a ton more to get weed the legal way, here's what ends up happening. The people who previously weren't buying weed because they wanted to follow the law, they're going to go to the shops, cool. The people who were previously breaking the law, buying it illegally, are going to look and be like, why would I spend an extra $30 or $15, whatever it is, on a gram? Is that what they sell it in? They sell it in grams? Ounces, right? Ounces?
Why are you looking at me?
I don't, because I'm not. You know,
do you think I'm like, you know,
I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying you're a kid, you know.
You're
however it is they're selling, they're going to say, well, I'm going to still go the other way. Now, the bad guys realize that. So the bad guys, guess what they do? I'm going to break into these shops because there's no consequences in San Francisco or in Oakland for me to do this. So I'm going to break in, steal their product, sell it cheaper than what they're selling it as a double screw you to the man. And they're going to make profit without putting a whole bunch on the line. That's why it's happening. We've decided for some reason to overtax. Now, I understand why there's a tax because, let's be honest, Democrats, who are mostly responsible for this, love taxes. But if you tax it to the point where it's still crazy expensive, the black market thrives. And then when you add to it the fact that we're not going to punish people who break the law, well, guess what? This sort of thing happens. And that is a problem. That is a huge problem. Now, at the same time, you have people like AOC who is getting ripped because she did an interview with the Washington Times last week. And she said, this is the direct quote, "A lot of these allegations of organized retail theft are not actually panning out. I believe it's a Walgreens in California cited it." She's talking about data. "But the data didn't back it up." No one has any clue what she just said, why she said it, what she's referring to. In fact, AOC doesn't understand what she just said. She just knows that she is pretending that the smash and grab theft that we've seen that is very clearly on the rise and very clearly organized in some way, is in fact happening. In fact, Walgreens, after this interview, put out a statement to the Washington Times that organized retail crime is one of the top challenges facing us. They say that the crime, quote, has evolved beyond shoplifting and petty theft to the sale of stolen and counterfeit goods online. You had Representative Rodney Davis, state rep out of Illinois. Or no, he's not a state, he's a congressman. I don't know what the data she is talking about. He said, "But you don't really need much data from someplace in San Francisco or California. All you need to do is walk down the street to the CVS in Eastern Market." He's referring to part of D.C. "I've seen on multiple occasions when I've been in there buying things, someone will come in and raid a shelf and walk out." Jim Banks, congressman from Indiana, said that the AOC comment was, quote, "tone deaf and offensive." And this is my favorite comment. This is very passive aggressive. And it starts out passive aggressive and then it gets just flatly aggressive. It came from the Retail Industry Leaders Association. Jason Brewer is the senior executive VP of communications. He said in an email to the Washington Times, or perhaps the Fox News, where I'm finding this story, "respectfully," and by the way, when you start anything with all due respect, at least this is how I do it. If I say "with all due respect, sir," I say in my head, what I mean is, I have zero respect for you whatsoever. I'm just going to posit a statement that I hope is considered biting and even a little bit rude and passive aggressive so that you don't get mad at me for challenging you. So whenever I said "respectfully" or "with all due respect, sir."
Everyone knows when you say "with no all due respect," you can say whatever you want. Ricky Bobby taught us that in 2004.
"With all due respect, you look like you kill puppies for a living. With all due respect, I think you're the dumbest person I've ever seen."
I can't say anything. You said it with respect.
I did it with respect, so I guess it's supposed to cut some of the sting. So, respectfully, the congresswoman has no idea what she's talking about. Is that respectful?
I mean, it was prefaced with respect.
"Both the data and stack of video evidence makes fairly clear that this is a growing problem in need of solutions. If she's not concerned with organized theft and increasingly violent attacks on retail employees, she should just say that." So it gets pretty aggressive towards the end. And he's, of course, absolutely right. I was asked about this on the Faulkner Focus earlier today. I was the lead guest on Fox News. And I responded by saying, I think the strategy here is that folks who are in her audience, far to the left, they don't get exposed to any news other than whatever they choose to look at in their echo chamber, Democracy Now! Or some nonsense. And they are of the belief that all of this is fake, that we're pushing this lie and we're doing it on purpose. It's just on the right wing and we're doing it to go after the Biden administration, pretending that, like Antifa, doesn't actually exist. Ask Jerry Nadler. And I think that this is being used by the left to just sort of mobilize their base to push back even harder against the right. The problem, of course, with that is that everybody else who's not a hardcore activist, which is the vast majority of the country, they look at that and say, well, that's really is out of touch. Why would you say something so silly? We see all the video. You mean to, you know, one time you get a case that doesn't make a trend, but then you're like, oh, this is happening dozens and dozens and dozens of times. The people who are the businesses who own the businesses or work at the businesses are being impacted. The folks who are shopping at the time that these smash and grabs are happening, like what happened in, what was it, Walnut Creek. They know that this is true. And these are mostly Democrats, because this is happening in Democrat-run cities. We're not getting this in, you know, Topeka, Kansas. It's happening in Democrat-run cities. And these Democrats are going to look at this and say, I don't like how my side is responding to this or pretending even to be interested in solutions. They're not. And so what ends up happening is they then say, oh, maybe I'm not going to vote for the Democrat this time around. So this is, politically speaking, is good for Republicans. 1-800-465-8770.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning and alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of the city of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Everett, over at Payne Field, because according to pre-pandemic trends, Payne Field Airport could see more than 4 million passengers a year by 2040. Now, you're thinking to yourself, well, 24, that's just about 20 years away. That's a long time. Why are we talking about that?
You'll be like 95 in 2040.
I will be 38. Because I'm 28 now.
You got the Benjamin Button going on.
And then you add 20, but then you minus 10, because that's how it works, according to the math, if I'm 28 years old right now. And I'm or 29. I don't remember, but I'm definitely under 30. And I'll be under 30 in 2042, dummy. That's how math works. Ego math. But even though it's a long time away, it's really important because this can spawn other ideas of how to tackle the regional airports that already exist, but also maybe you replicate the model to lessen, again, the load on SeaTac and the load on the east side when dealing with Spokane. We've had conversations, this was also pre-pandemic, about looking around the state and say, hey, where could we maybe do some more of these regional airports? Now, according to King 5, Woke 5 News, they say in a forecast paid for by Snohomish County, experts predict demand for travel could quadruple by 2040. That would mean a little more than 4 million passengers a year. Now, the prediction is in part due to the increase in demand for the Puget Sound area as a whole, but also because the capacity limits that SeaTac International Airport is already facing. Now, as Payne Field considers expansion, and there's going to obviously be, regardless of whether or not anyone even buys this study, there's going to be some reasonable expansion over at Payne. And again, it'll be limited in scope to a degree. They're going to consider public comment. So, you know, we've always heard from some folks within the area impacted here. Hey, it's more busy than we, it's busier than we thought it would be. It's louder than we thought it would be. Something I understand, but you are going to have to deal with it. It's not like there wasn't an airport there. It was just a different kind of airport. Michael Tuberty is the vice president of master planning over at Ludrum and Bro. This is the analysts who decided to, or the advisors, I guess, who decided to do this study on behalf, or decided they were paid to do this study. They had a meeting not long ago and said, yeah, we're going to expand where we need to.
We know that over time, there will not be a need for any additional runways. However, we do know that the airfield system will need to be improved from an operational standpoint.
Now, you heard him say, we're not going to expand any of the runways. We don't have that kind of space, but we will expand, most likely, public transportation options so people can actually get here without having to take their own car, which, of course, leads to congestion in and around the area. We'll do de-icing equipment when we need to. We'll do anything that we need to meet the demand of the consumers. Now, at the end of this, the question first becomes, well, what does travel look like after the pandemic? We assume, and I think for the most part it's probably safe to make this assumption, but you know it kind of depends on who's in office at the time. We assume that travel will come back to norm, right? Don't know how long it's going to take. I mean, we had the story last week of pandemic-level records over at SeaTac, but it still didn't hit where we were even hitting pre-pandemic. Does Payne Field get hit longer than SeaTac? Maybe. Or I can make the argument the opposite. Maybe it does better than SeaTac as a whole because it's a more intimate experience. If you were, you know, nervous about traveling, less likely to be in a crowded terminal by going to Payne because of the limited offerings at this point. I don't know. But for the sake of argument, let's just assume that we get to a point where we do get back to pre-pandemic levels and Everett's Payne Field explodes. That's great because then you can use that information, say, okay, we've got our regional airport in Bellingham. Is there anything we can do in Bellingham to meet the Payne Field model? Or, and what's most likely going to occur, do you look in Pierce County or Thurston County and say, hey, let us make our own version of Payne Field? Don't know where you put it, but you put it in an area that is still relatively easy to get to, or you can make it easy to get to. And then bam, all of a sudden, instead of having to make the drive from Lakewood or from Olympia to SeaTac, you do it to Yelm, right? You do it even to Puyallup. I know we're getting, or even Auburn, if you want to get into a little bit of North King County, like that perhaps works. It wouldn't be either Puyallup or Auburn, obviously, just because of the density. But in that general area, maybe it makes sense.
I would love, right? A South Sound Payne Field.
Yeah. Now, is it going to offer a ton of places? No, it'll have limited routes that it'll take. I'm assuming, again, regionally, you'll get it into Portland and Spokane and Vancouver, BC. But you'll probably also get LA. You'll get San Francisco, places you don't want to go. So that's a bad idea. But Vegas you'll get. And, you know, you'll get some of those. And maybe they'll do some of the longer flights. They'll go to New York eventually. Maybe they'll go to Nashville, stuff like that. Again, if you can get, over the course of a week, several thousand fewer at SeaTac, well, SeaTac is less of a nightmare to deal with for on the days that it's a nightmare. And it's just good so you don't have to make that drive. Because, again, just imagine living in Olympia, having to drive down to SeaTac. Like, that's a long drive.
SeaTac is so much of a nightmare that I consider flying out of Payne Field driving from Bonnie Lake instead of going to SeaTac.
And the problem for a lot of folks is not only is it a long drive. So let's just for the sake of argument say you're coming from Milton, the gem of Pierce County. Okay, so you're driving about 45 minutes to get to SeaTac. That's without traffic. You have to drive. Or someone has to drive you. You can't take light rail at this point.
Not till like 2026.
Which is really 3072. Yeah.
Exactly.
So you have to drive, which then means you have to park. Which means you have to pay the not just the higher number or the higher fee for the parking because of the taxes that are attached to the Port of Seattle, but it's also just kind of inconvenient. Then you got to get into the tram and you're waiting there. Like, when is the tram? Can we just go? We got to wait until we're full. No, do we have to wait till you don't know who's going to come in? And then you get it's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah, give me a South Sound pain.
Can't
field.
Uber. What do you think the Uber is going to cost? It costs from the city we don't talk about in this segment to get to SeaTac in the middle of the day, okay? It was like, what was it? It was 57. Do you remember how much I said? 50. It was just under $60, between $50 and $60. That's insane.
That's
so imagine from Milton, the gem of Pierce County, the cost. At least between $51 and $61.
At least.
It's probably more than that. Go look it up on your phone. I'm kind of curious now. Meanwhile, I am. Are you not curious? A car crashed into the historical Vaughan Library on the Key Peninsula. And it happened at a time, just timing didn't quite work. Not that it ever makes for good timing when a car crashes into a building. But it happened just as it was done being renovated. At the time that this crash happened, most of the exterior was either finished or in the process of being finished. Like, they were just moments away. And I'm told, based on the coverage in the Tacoma News Tribune, quoting coverage in the Gateway, that people are in tears. Everyone who's worked on this project is in tears. They quote a guy named Barton Wolf. It's quite the name. He sits on the board of the Key Peninsula Historical Society, and someone named Barton Wolf, that actually kind of makes sense. That matches up. He's quoted as saying, everybody is devastated. It's so many hours of hard work, and in addition, it is decades and decades of history that have been destroyed in just one corner of the building. We'll get through it. We can fix this. We can fix this. Now, at that point in the story, I immediately say to myself, is the driver okay? The person who got into the car accident?
Did you not hear the story? The vintage hall was damaged.
Oh, no. A library was damaged. What about the person driving? Now, in fairness, it turns out to be an unfair question. It does highlight the fact that the Tacoma News Tribune is a trash newspaper that doesn't know how to properly format stories and sort of lay out the facts. They say neighbors heard a large crash sometime between 10 and 11 p.m. on November 30th, and a neighbor who left for work about 4:30 a.m. the next day, quote, saw this car planted in the corner of the hall. No one was inside the vehicle. So the driver either fled or...
Self-driving cars are taking
over. A self-driving car. I mean, we did learn that in Waukesha, according to CNN, a car drove into a parade. Perhaps this was immediately... The funny thing is, I didn't immediately think of a fleeing driver. I thought, oh, maybe someone didn't put the parking brake on and it rolled down a hill. But then I saw photos like it doesn't quite make sense. So someone crashed the car. Presumably it was stolen. They didn't get into any of the details because I'm going to assume that the person who fled probably didn't own the car. Otherwise, it'd be pretty easy to track it back to them. Nevertheless, could we put that at the top of the story instead of after the, oh my gosh, our lives are ruined because a car crash occurred and it hurt a historical building?
TNT ones, you know their priorities.
Seriously, I cannot be the only person who responded by saying, well, what about the driver? You're seriously not going to talk about the driver at all?
Do you not care about the vintage hall?
No, I don't care. In fairness, they could have put that at the top, the info about the driver, and I still would have not cared about the story. But now that I can mock how poorly written it was and how it responded, we were able to do it in the big local.
A scheduled Uber tomorrow from Milton to SeaTac would run you at... $50 for an Uber XL.
Nuts.
You can go the Uber X, in reality, who rides in an Uber X for $40, but really an Uber X?
Yeah, an Uber X is what I take if I'm going to take, because I usually go like four blocks. Okay, not that small, but I go like a mile and a half.
You're Jason Rantz. You at least need the Uber comfort.
Oh, I need the XL, baby. I want that big SUV to pull up, but
I should look into Uber helicopter. They need to bring those to Seattle.
Frankly, I take a Lyft. I don't like Uber. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We're live on this Monday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. I'm getting the impression that at least at one college, that either take on the BLM message or you get fired. If you don't take the position we want, or you take a position that ends up angering our student body, or at least a loud, hypersensitive group on campus, you end up losing your job. This is a case that happened at Illinois State University. An assistant football coach ends up getting fired because he dared to replace the BLM flag that was put on his door. He didn't put it on his door. It was put by someone else. In fact, it was put on his door when he was out on leave after his wife died of breast cancer. It's so bizarre. This is what the suit alleges, at least. Kurt Beathard is the former offensive coordinator over at ISU. He says he was dismissed by the head coach, Brock Spak, and terminated by the former athletic director, Larry Lyons, back in September of last year. This is a suit that was filed just within the last few days. And it alleges First Amendment retaliation and viewpoint discrimination against him, and claims he was fired because, quote, he did not toe the party line regarding Black Lives Matter, according, again, a quote from the lawsuit. Now, according to the former coach, a BLM poster was put on his door while he was on leave after his wife died of breast cancer. When he got to work, he looked at this poster and said, no. Hard pass. And he replaced it with a poster that said, all lives matter to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So he did two things he's not supposed to do, which is diss BLM for all lives matter and promote religion. In particular, promote Jesus. Can't be Christian, you can't be Jewish, you can be Muslim, that's cool, you can be Hindu, that's cool, you can be an atheist. All good on a college campus, but can't be Christian or Jewish. Now, the poster stayed on his door for about 2 weeks, but then it was removed, and then he was fired. He was fired by Brock Spak, the coach. That's what he says. The lawsuit also says that the coach himself once referred to BLM as freaking nuts, and that the athletic director, Larry Lyons, held a Zoom meeting to encourage unity during which he said, quote, all Redbirds' lives matter. That'll get you in trouble. Redbirds, that's the mascot. And weirdly, it's a green bird. I don't know why they call it a red bird. It's green.
Colorblind.
But also, I'm colorblind, yeah. So, the suit noted that Lyons was forced to issue an apology for a statement and that he retired from the university about a month later. Okay. This is a perfect example of why you shouldn't bring overtly political issues into the classroom, into a campus, into the workplace. Now, certain workplaces, you can get away with it. For example, we talk about politics for a living. It makes sense for us. But this should have no place on a college campus, in an athletic department, or in a classroom. It is unavoidably political. Because the BLM movement, it asked for, it promoted, it advocated on behalf of policy prescriptions to address the issues that they pretended were legit. But really, this is an end-around goal of destroying capitalism and abolishing police. Pushing that aside for a moment, they had specific policy prescriptions that they were advocating on behalf of. Policy prescriptions get put in place by politicians. Politicians are political. Political means there's going to be someone who takes a different side. Not everyone supports the BLM movement or any of the policies that they push. Count me one of them. Count probably 99.9% of the people listening right now are not fans of the BLM movement. You can acknowledge that there's some aspects maybe you support, I guess. But overall, this country doesn't actually support what the movement became. It wasn't merely a bunch of people rallying. It turned into riots. It turned into in-your-face, aggressive, uncomfortable because of their tactics movement. And it lost a lot of its popularity. Talked about this last week. They are encouraging BLM, the national movement, is encouraging a boycott of white run and owned businesses. It's a racist organization. It adopts racist policies and strategies. So when you decide to take that position and ascribe it to a member of your staff without their permission, of course they're going to react the way that this person reacted. He could have done things much differently, much worse. In this case, he put all lives matter to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I don't think that that is offensive. I say that as a Jew. I don't find it offensive at all. And if you can put a BLM poster up, then you can put the All Lives Matter poster up that references Jesus. Again, I'd prefer, in the grand scheme of things, you don't post anything political. You should not know the political beliefs of your professor or your coach, right? As a matter of policy, you shouldn't know that because it just opens the door to claims of mistreatment, discrimination, retaliation, whatever it happens to be. And that's why in a lot of workplaces, it's verboten, right? That you're not supposed to talk about anything controversial. Hey, did you hear what Sharon thinks about abortion? No, because I don't care. She's our accountant. She does our payroll. I don't want to have to wonder whether or not she didn't pay me a reimbursement that she owed on time because she was retaliating against me for holding a different position on abortion. Oh, what's your position? I'm not going to tell you. Well, you kind of already told me because I know Sharon's and yours is the opposite of Sharon's. So now I know. Now I'm going to discriminate. It's a mess. It's a Jason Rant show. Not a mess.